All right, here they come. Queen to the Chesser, big bull to tablations, 10 to Billy to match his wang, and the dealer gets a 3.
Hit me.
I can't hit you because it ain't your turn yet. You understand? You see these other people? These are the real ones. These are real people here. What do you do, Ches? Hit or sit? That's 23 up, Cheswick. All right, Tabor, you're busted. Give me this.
23.
Huh? Hit?
Hit me.
Shut up! Tabor.
Come on.
Dime.
I'm next, Tabor.
You're not next. Huh?
Hit me.
Ace.
Hit me.
That's 4 or 14. Don't want any more. Billy?
Hit
all
me.
Right, 5.
Hit me. Hit me.
Huh? You didn't make a bet, Martini. I can't hit you.
Yeah,
Jesus,
I bet a dime.
Huh?
I bet a dime.
All right, here. Go ahead. That's 20 showing.
No.
Take your money.
No. It's not. It's 10, 11, 12, 13.
This is a fucking queen here, you understand? You don't count to this and to this.
Hit me.
You got 20 showing.
Hit me again. I don't know the call.
Scanlon, who's pitching the opener?
No, but Mac.
Medication time.
This isn't a queen.
Medication time.
I'm a queen.
Medication.
Mac, hit me.
I want who's who's pitching the opener?
Hit me.
Jesus Christ almighty. Do you nuts want to play cards or you want to fucking jerk? Play the game.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Play the game, Marty.
What are you talking about? I am playing the game.
But play the game.
Leave me alone. I ain't doing anything to you. What bullshit?
Your bullshit.
What about your bullshit?
Come on, play the game.
Listen, you keep your hands off me.
Play the game.
I've had enough bullshit out of you, do you hear me?
Play the game.
What the fuck are you picking on me for?
Play the game, Marty.
Look, I'm trying to ignore you. Just
play the game. Play the game.
Keep your hands off me, you son of a bitch. You keep your hands off me.
Play the game.
You hear me? Look, come on. I can be pushed just so far, see? Just touch me once more.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yeah, that was actually audio from the debt ceiling negotiations.
High production value offset by unrestrained profanity.
Hey, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob Seska here. That's Chez Pazienza over there.
It is.
Big show today. Mainly want to talk about the debt ceiling negotiations because it is like one...
It's the last show we're going to do before we're all wearing barrels around us like back in the 20s.
That's exactly right. Oh, my God. Living in shanty towns.
Obamaville. That's what they're going to turn Central Park into.
Yeah, I'd rather it be Boehnerville. Yeah.
Boehnerville sounds better. It's got a better ring to it.
Yeah, it's like Boehnerville. But, I mean, it really is like Cuckoo's Nest. It is really one flew the Cuckoo's Nest that's going on. It's just this repetitive back and forth, you know. I'm wondering if... I'm wondering who's who in the Cuckoo's Nest metaphor. I think Tabor... is the Republicans. Play the game.
Right.
And then Harding is like Harry Reid. Like, just touch me once more! Don't touch me! Touch me once more! I dare you to touch
Michelle,
me once more!
Michelle Bachmann's gotta be Nurse Ratched.
That's
right! Just gotta be. I want my cigarettes now, Nurse Ratched!
I don't know who Cheswick is. I'm not quite sure, but we could probably, someone will probably do this calculus and match up the characters to the actual politicians, but it really is like that. I mean, Chez, I've been finding myself this week, and for the most part last week too, just watching cable news and getting extraordinarily frustrated, and MSNBC specifically, just following along with not only the coverage, but actually what's going on. And just going again and again, repeating to myself, why are we talking about this? Why is this even an issue? And how can they possibly be, and I'm speaking they in terms of the Republicans, how can they possibly get away with this?
It's. I mean, it really used the word. I find it's funny. I look at the blog, obviously, since I write it, and I find myself using the words shameful and shameless all the time now, to the point where I'm actually thinking that I need to start like looking up thesaurus.com or something like that. But it's just it's shameful and embarrassing. I think. The culmination for me this week was I said something. I got so pissed off that I actually wrote, I'm like, you know what? We should just be invaded. We really should. I mean, don't we invade countries when they threaten the world? We're threatening the fucking world.
Yeah.
You know, the ripple effects are going to screw everybody's economy. And because we have children in the capital, we're going to fuck the planet. And as far as I'm concerned, that's reason enough for any other country to say, you know what, you're not adult enough to have the government that you have, and it's time that we took your toys away from you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And regardless of what happens, what they're saying now is that we're beyond that zero barrier, to use the Armageddon term.
Exactly.
We're past the zero barrier, and that even if they come up with a deal and raise the debt ceiling, there still might be a downgrade in our debt rating. I mean, they might actually drop it from AAA to something else lower, which would then spike interest rates. I mean, it would actually – I mean, it would be one thing if the debt ceiling wasn't raised and we defaulted on our debt. Government would have to shut down, I think, 40% of operations. It's close to –
Don't worry about it. If they downgrade us – some geniuses on Wall Street will just bundle us up with a bunch of other toxic shit and sell it off to some sucker. They're so good at that.
Yeah, well, there is some hope. There is some hope that the awfulness will rescue
us. And besides
us.
That, it's not going to happen. I know that because Michelle Bachmann said it today. She said that she's not going to vote for any proposal that includes tax increases or raises the debt ceiling, because the debt ceiling is bullshit.
Yeah.
And we're not going to default. And everything's going to be just fine.
They think it's a hoax. They think it's, you know, like Rush Limbaugh and the Republicans all believe that the climate crisis is a hoax. And
right.
Well, Rush Limbaugh believes that heat is a hoax as well.
Right.
And now they're saying that the debt ceiling and defaulting on the debt and the subsequent economic crisis that would ensue, that's also a hoax.
All you have to do is go to one place. It's one fucking stop on the internet. Think Progress actually put together, I think it was the list of like the dumbest things that Michelle Bachmann's ever said. And, you know, she thinks that homosexuals aren't born that way and that they can be reprogrammed to be straight people. She thinks The Lion King was gay propaganda. She thinks that abolishing minimum wage will create jobs. She thinks Terri Schiavo was never actually brain dead. She thinks climate change is a hoax. Carbon dioxide's harmless. You know, intelligent design, evolution's bullshit, and intelligent design actually created the planet. So when this woman says that the debt ceiling is meaningless and this whole thing is a scam, you know you can trust her.
That's absolutely right. And we do, speaking of Michelle Bachmann, we have a new addition to the Crazy Caucus, which is led by Michelle Bachmann. We'll get to that in a minute. But the latest news on the debt ceiling is that the Boehner plan vote that was supposed to take place in the House of Representatives was suspended abruptly. Here's the story from the Huffington Post. House GOP leadership announced abruptly on Thursday evening that they were suspending a vote on Speaker John Boehner's debt ceiling proposal, signaling in the process that the GOP lacked the votes to pass the package. The news came just minutes before party leadership was set to hold a 5:30 p.m. vote on the proposal, which would cut roughly $915 billion in spending over the next 10 years, but only raise the debt ceiling through the end of the calendar year. It's a ridiculous plan, and it would actually end up costing $100 billion a year, which would negate any savings that it would create. I mean, it's a stupid, stupid, stupid plan. And regardless of whether or not they have a vote today is irrelevant, because there's no votes in the Senate for it. I mean, it's just not going to pass, which is why Harry Reid wanted a vote on it right away. Like, as soon as it would have passed tonight, right, Harry Reid was going to take it up, have a vote in the Senate, and then it would have just failed. So,
yeah. Here, thanks for playing.
Exactly. You know, there's a great piece in The Economist, which I actually subscribe to the paper version of The Economist. I don't know why. But it is it gives you kind of this, it's kind of a conservative magazine, but there are things in The Economist that don't get covered in the American press. And they have a fantastic article that kind of outlines all of the plans that are on the table and the entire process from beginning to end. It's really fantastic. And if you get a chance to pick up The Economist, read the article. It's called Scheme, Stonewall, and Fulminate. typically British sounding headline. But it's really good. And here's, we talked a little bit last week about the gang.
Those are actually the three lost hobbits, by the way.
Did you see John McCain?
I did. Oh, I sure did. That was just beautiful.
Yeah.
If anybody knows what it was like during Middle Earth times, it's John McCain.
That's right. Because he himself is a hobbit. I mean, he's about 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
He said on the floor of the Senate today, called the Tea Party hobbits, which is actually quite insulting to hobbits.
Yeah.
He said, the idea seems to be that
hobbits were such industrious creatures and so noble.
They were kindly people. I mean, they really were. They kept to themselves. They stayed in
the Shire.
In the Shire, right? They didn't mess with anyone. They liked to drink. Well, I guess they do have in common. They like to drink beer, and they like to eat a lot, and they like to just sit around. This is kind of what the Tea Party does. When you go to a Tea Party rally, isn't it, Chez? I mean, they just go there, and there's a performance on the stage. Maybe sometimes it's Lee Greenwood, sometimes it's Andrew Breitbart. But the people evidently protesting at a Tea Party rally, they just kind of sit there in lawn chairs. It's kind of like a lawn party. Like, you expect some of them to wear, you know, some of them are wearing tri-corner hats with tea bags hanging on. Others are just wearing like parrot head hats. It's like a Jimmy Buffett concert. It kind of looks like.
That's because those little hover around scooters don't work very well on grass.
So they've got no choice but to stay put.
The hover around scooters, by the way, that, you know, the government basically helped pay for.
Oh, yeah, really?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, you can get, they always say that. They say you can get the government to help out and help pay. And it's okay if they do it. That's all right. But those, you know, those freeloading welfare queens, those, you know, those folks living in the ghetto, they're the ones who are ripping off the government. But me, no, I deserve my fucking hover around.
Yeah. The hover around invented by Tom Cruise. Did you notice that?
I love that. Really do. That's the less crazy Tom Cruise.
Less crazy Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise.
You won't see that Tom Cruise hanging off the Petronas Tower, whatever the hell, the big tower in Dubai, the Burj Al Arab or whatever.
I find myself actually occasionally singing the hover around song. It's like we're walking around, just going, you can go, go, go in your hover around. And I was like, what am I singing? Why am I singing this?
If you go to Walmart and you do that, you'll actually start a caravan like the Pied Piper.
They'll start doing that.
You can lead them through the lingerie section of 88 double F bras.
That's right. They'll start doing that ballet. You know, the hover around ballet in the commercial where they do from the overhead view. They sort of ride around in formation in the middle of that town square, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Oh, God. But yeah, I mean, only you and I can come up with a way to link the hover around to the debt ceiling negotiations.
Exactly.
But yeah, so John McCain said, the House, the idea seems to be that if the House GOP refuses to raise the debt ceiling, a default crisis or gradual government shutdown will ensue, and the public will turn en masse against Barack Obama. Well, you know what? I agree with every word of that. I agree with John McCain. The public will turn against the president. The Republicans simply have the stronger marketing machine. So that's what they're betting on. They think that what they can do is they can wreck all of this economic havoc, and they will be able to spin it in a way that people won't blame them. They'll blame Barack Obama. Now, the polls right now are showing something different, but we don't know what will happen when people are really – when suddenly they look at their, you know, their credit card statement and their interest rate has quadrupled.
It's the same thing we talked about last week about how I truly believe that there are some within the Republican Party, certainly the House Republicans, who are willing to burn the fucking country to the ground if it means that they can hang it around the neck of Barack Obama and get him out of office.
That's right. So McCain continues, the Republican House that failed to raise the debt ceiling would somehow escape all blame. That also is true. Then Democrats would have no choice but to pass a balanced budget amendment and reform entitlements. And the Tea Party hobbits could return to Middle Earth having defeated Mordor.
God, that's brilliant. Well, it's actually Sauron, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's right. This is the kind of crack political thinking that turned Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell into GOP Senate nominees. The reality is that the debt limit will be raised one way or another, and the only issue now with how much fiscal reform and what political fallout. McCain... there's not a lot of this I disagree with. In fact, I agree with most of it. Problem is, this guy's got a lot of nerve calling out Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell when he actually invented the template for those two in Sarah Palin. I mean, I think Sarah Palin's
good point. Yeah.
I mean, for him to bust on the Tea Party, to bust on Sharon Angle, to bust on Christine O'Donnell, he's responsible for all that crap. I mean, it was the McCain, it was the McCain-Palin rallies, and especially the Palin alone rallies that created that Tea Party atmosphere. All those wing nuts out there with, you know, curious George dolls and, you know, chanting against Marxism and socialism and all that crap. That was his invention. The Tea Party is a direct offshoot of the McCain-Palin rallies.
No.
And so this guy's actually lashing out against something of his own creation. He created this monster. John McCain is, I would say, at least 80% responsible for all of it.
And, patient zero.
Yeah, exactly. He's like the monkey in Outbreak. He's like the...
Right.
but you know, I think the Tea Party is more like the orcs. I think that it's more like the... Yeah, because they're being controlled by Sauron.
Sauron.
And so I think their mission is to wreak havoc throughout Middle Earth and destroy, regardless of the creature. They'll destroy the dwarves, they'll destroy the hobbits, they'll destroy the humans, you know, they'll destroy the elves. They just want to destroy. And so that, right. To me, that makes more sense. But okay, John McCain compares the Tea Party to hobbits, which, sorry, hobbits.
All right, and all the little layers of onion that we managed to get way, way the hell off track, you started by talking about The Economist. I actually remember that, which is shocking because I did so many drugs back in like the 90s that it amazes me I can remember anything anymore.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to do was detail the Economist summary of the Gang of Six plan, or as you prefer the Gang of Four plan.
Gang of Four. Oh, I like the band.
The Gang of Six's plan, this is from The Economist, would want an immediate endorsement from the president. Okay, wait. I started too late. All right. Okay. The talk of the Senate, instead, is a proposal from its Gang of Six, three Democrats and three Republicans who have been debating a big budgetary overhaul for months. It would cut deficits by the magic $4 trillion, which is what the president wants. And I think the president's bluffing. Three-quarters of the savings would come from spending cuts and a quarter from increased revenue. An elaborate arsenal of procedural rules and automatic triggers would deploy to keep Congress on the straight and narrow. The plan doles out bitter medicine to both parties. Republicans would have to swallow cuts to military spending and higher revenues. Okay, so they would have to deal with tax increases in military spending, which ought to happen. That stuff ought to happen. To make the latter more palatable, the extra cash would come solely from eliminating tax loopholes and would be accompanied by a lowering of income and corporate taxes. So there's actually the Gang of Six plan. In order to reduce the deficit, they're talking about cutting taxes somehow. And that's a point I'm going to get to in a second. Democrats, meanwhile, would have to stomach cuts to cherished schemes such as Medicare and Medicaid, which provide low-cost health care to the elderly and poor, respectively. In addition, the measure of inflation used to calculate annual increases in many benefits would be made stingier. So they're talking about COLAs, cost of living increases, and things like that. But there's a sweetener regarding Social Security, state pensions. Any savings made from that program would go towards shoring up its perilous finances rather than paying down the deficit. So it's, you know, again, Social Security is not really related to the deficit, but yet they're going to use these negotiations to monkey with Social Security. And there's a very clear solution to that, but it's not being used at all. It's not being discussed, as far as I know. So regarding this Gang of Six plan, Bernie Sanders came out with a pretty good analysis of how it kind of sucks. And here's Bernie Sanders' analysis. Point by point. The Gang of Six plan reduces the top marginal income tax rate for the wealthiest Americans and most profitable corporations from 35% to as low as 23%. 34% lower than the top tax rates under Bush. Instead of reforming the alternative minimum tax, it abolishes it altogether, providing a major tax cut for the wealthiest Americans. It reduces the deficit by about $3.7 trillion over 10 years, while providing a net tax cut of $1.5 trillion. That would mainly go to the wealthiest Americans and most profitable corporations. In other words, 100% of the deficit reduction achieved by the Gang of Six plan is through spending cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, education, child care, Head Start, LIHEAP, the environment, and other programs that the sick, the elderly, the children, and working families need. Any tax revenue that is raised by closing tax loopholes for large corporations must be used to lower tax rates. Revenue raisers cannot be used to increase spending at all. Revenue raisers can only be used to lower tax rates or reduce the deficit. It reduces the deficit on the backs of the elderly, children, blah, blah, blah. We know this. It imposes the undefined spending caps. Even though Social Security recipients have gotten a COLA for two straight years, the Gang of Six believes that formula for calculating COLAs, cost of living adjustments, is too generous. So, you know, this just, it all comes down to this. It all comes down to basically a two-word description, which is shit sandwich. I mean, we're stuck. I mean, and it's reversed. It's not like two pieces of bread with shit in the middle. It's two hunks of shit with bread in the middle.
So it's like we're two hunks of shit with shit in the middle, like one of those KFC sandwiches.
That's right. It's two hunks of shit between with a hunk
more
of shit.
Fried shit.
Yeah. Good Lord. Because there's really at this point there's no win in any of this. I mean, the Gang of Six, this is the most popular solution, and it's cutting taxes. It's unbelievable. Cutting all of these programs, cutting Social Security. Well, not cutting Social Security. It's adjusting, you know, cost of living and how COLAs are calculated. That could be a real problem because
it's funny because you talk about this and you know, no offense to you or anyone who talks about it, there's a part of me that always zones out, and the reason that I zone out has nothing to do with the facts are boring or the figures are boring or any of that. It's just I keep coming back to, why the fuck are we having this conversation?
Exactly.
Why are we doing this?
That's why I'm detailing all of this, because it is ultimately so futile. It all comes down to nonsense. This is all nonsensical. The last thing we ought to be doing right now is talking about deficit reduction and debt reduction. We have a 9.2% unemployment rate. This is not news to anybody, but just to summarize where we are, the economy isn't recovering nearly as fast as it ought to. It's not even keeping up. Unemployment or jobs aren't keeping up with population growth. Businesses right now, they've figured out, and this is corporations on down to small business, they figured out that that they can make do without hiring any more people. We don't want to get burned again. We're not going to hire a bunch of people. We're not confident in the state of the economy right now. So no, we're just going to sit pat where we are. We're just going to deal with, we're just going to load up our current employees, the ones we haven't fired yet, because they'll take it. They don't want to be out in the job market. So there are all of these factors that are holding back the economy. Suddenly, we're going to start cutting spending. We need to be spending more. We need another $800 billion, $1 trillion in stimulus.
Yeah, I mean, and even above and beyond that, even above and beyond the debate over whether we should be pouring more money into the economy, which I do agree with, and as do, you know, most reputable economists, the thing, the top of the shameful pile for me, the thing that if I were living in another country, I'd look at us and I would just say, all right, that's the thing that makes so little sense to me, really, children who need to have their toys taken away, is the entire idea that, like you said, we have an unemployment problem and we're worrying about the deficit. Breaking that down, it's this fucking simple. You are worrying about a problem. You are really concerning yourself with a problem years from now instead of the problem today.
Yeah.
And the thing that shocks me the most about that is all these, you know, the Republicans love to constantly, you know, Rick Scott did, maybe I'll get into this in a little bit. Rick Scott did an interview, I think it was yesterday, with CNN, and CNN just hammered him. They beat the crap out of him.
Speaking of someone who looks like he's from Middle Earth.
Yeah, exactly. No, he looks like, every time Rick Scott speaks, I keep waiting for him to say, you have 2 Earth minutes to surrender. But he... You know, I mean, he's a hack to begin with, and I mean, has the lowest approval rating I think humanly possible for a politician, and seriously is the largest, most pervasive and pronounced case of buyer's remorse, I think, and probably in Florida political history, which is really saying something. But you know, he got up there and he made the same argument that Republicans always make, which is we need to run our you know, it's such a great talking point, such a bullshit talking point. We need to run our government like a business and like the way American families have to run their lives. Really, how many American families or decent afloat businesses do you know worry about something that's going to happen 2 years from now instead of taking care of a crisis that's happening right now at this very, very moment?
Yeah.
How flat out, how stupid and stubborn do you have to be to do something like that, especially knowing full well that if you fix the problem today, that will help to solve the problem tomorrow? You know, all you got to do, if you fix the economy and get it going full strength again, it will chop away at the deficit. We did it, but you know, we did it in the 90s. It can happen again.
That's right.
You know, it has happened before. It can happen again. It's not a big deal. And yet, amazingly, you know, I mean, this is where you can speculate. There is that part of me, and it's a very large part, that just thinks that this has got to be that none of this matters. None of this is about money. None of this is about anything. All it is about is sabotaging the economy,
That's right.
getting Obama out of office, and saying no to any fucking thing he says.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I can't remember who wrote it, but it was brilliant. It may have been you. I can't even remember, honestly. But I remember I read somewhere. Oh, I think it might have been Lincoln's. Actually, it was Lincoln's.
Yeah.
At Huff. Yeah, I know. Yeah. There's that name again. Yeah. He hates me. Lincoln's at Huffington, who said, actually, he said, for all of the, you know, you can't figure out the Republicans. You can't figure out what they're, you know, they're thinking, and they're, you know, they're hypocritical. They're constantly going back and forth. His point was hilarious. It was very binary. He's like, you know what? They're not going back and forth at all. Hmm. Actually, they're very simple to figure out. Their answer is whatever Obama says, it's the opposite. That simple.
Yeah.
It's that the president is always wrong. That is their they don't vary from that you know, that way of looking at things.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know.
Right. And I think even Mitch McConnell admitted that much. I mean,
he did.
For a guy as turtly and weird looking he is, looks like an albino sleestack is what
I love
Mitch
that.
McConnell
That's the
like.
best metaphor ever.
But he once said that, you know, he's asked, well, you know, you voted to raise the debt ceiling numerous times. I believe Mitch McConnell voted 5 different times to raise the debt ceiling under George W. Bush. You know, what's the difference now? Why suddenly this change of heart now? And he said, well, frankly, because there's a Democrat in the White House. That's why I'm not refusing to do it now. It's just
He said that before holding his hand up and going,
yeah, going after Marshall, Will and Holly, and very slowly, very slowly, with his arms stretched out. Just
big eyes.
And then consulting with Enoch over the crystals. Mm.
Oh, God, I haven't heard that in so long.
Enoch. Enoch was great. Enoch was the coolest thing on that show. Enoch was the very articulate sleestack. He was the evolved sleestack. But nevertheless, you know, this is you're exactly right. I mean, it's completely sabotage. This is entirely politically motivated. It has nothing to do with sound economic policy. The Republicans aren't they have no policy position whatsoever. They're all about marketing and politics. That they policy insofar as they discuss policy, it's just a matter of selling something political. There's no policy platform for the sake of coming up with a better way to govern. It's just what can we do to get elected as rapidly as possible. And in this case, they've calculated that if they sabotage the economy, the president will look bad, and then they can win the White House, and then they can win more congressional seats and on down the line. I mean,
right.
That's,
and it's the constant, also the constant diversionary horseshit argument that, well, you know, where's the president's plan? Guess what, fuckwad? He's the president of the United States. It's not his job to come up with this plan. It's your job to come up with this plan. It should be as simple as him saying, I want to raise the debt ceiling. Well, that sucks, but we've done it 8 billion times before. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's, you know, you were mentioning Rick Scott and comparing the government, running the government like a business. The real area where they fail on that metaphor is the fact that any business needs to raise revenue. I mean, any business needs to make money. Money needs to be coming into a business. You cannot grow your business by simply cutting all of your expenses, cutting your employees, cutting your benefits, cutting your inventory, cutting spending on office supplies and facilities. That's not, there's no way to run a business. And the way the government earns revenue is through taxes. The way government also earns revenue is by selling T-bills, by selling bonds. Okay. These are ways that, you know, this quote unquote business earns money. And they use that money to invest in the people. Because let's face it, the government is the people. There's no big separation there. There's no big mystery in terms of who's running the government. We run the government.
And you know, it's interesting that you say that because, you know, when obviously the recession is still terrible, but I know that when it was at, you know, when it was at its height in the sense that it was the only thing anybody was talking about and it you know, took up all our airtime on television and the papers and on the internet and all that shit. You know, I talk to a lot of, I wasn't a business major. I don't have an MBA, anything like that. But I talked to a lot of my friends who do work in business. And they said, they're like, you know what? The people who are succeeding right now are the ones, if they had any money to spend while other businesses are cutting back, they're the ones going out and spending more money. And they're doing that to bring in the customers that remain. And they're succeeding because of that. If you can do it, if you can afford to do it, do it. And I think you've said this before. Yeah, it sucks. You don't want to spend more money than you take in, of course. But the government has the ability right now to spend the money that the average American can't. Mm-hmm. So it makes absolute sense if we can spend more money to prime the pump, as they used to say.
That's right.
To rejuvenate the economy, then, you know, you do it. Don't be stupid. Yeah. That's how a business works.
Yeah, exactly. What created the recession in the first place? What created the recession in the first place is economic uncertainty led to a lack of spending. No one was pumping money into the economy, so therefore the GDP drops below zero. In this case, it dropped 7 percentage points below zero, which was a record number. It's the deepest drop since the Great Depression. And so when no one is spending, as you were saying, when no one is spending, the government with its AAA debt rating is in a unique position to be able to infuse money into the economy, therefore growing the GDP. You know, its ability to spend money on roads and construction and innovation and science spending money on actually giving tax cuts and benefits such as food stamps and unemployment benefits to people on the lower end of the economic spectrum, because those people spend that money. You give it to the rich people, they already have all their money they need to spend. So what they do, when you give tax cuts to rich people and mega corporations, what they do is they just pocket that money. They just put that in the bank. They just, you know, they're not out there spending it. That's just a fact. I mean, I'm just sitting here. This is not like Newt Gingrich calls liberal math. This is real, actual fact math.
Yeah, because if it's not, then where the hell are the jobs? Because they've gotten all kinds of tax breaks for a really long time. And by the way, you know, you do have to draw a delineation between, you know, Boehner always likes to talk about, I ran a small business. Well, look, you know what? There is a difference between a small business owner who, if he or she gets a break, you know, might be able to take that and turn it around and do something good with it. Nobody's, you know, nobody ever wants to come down on business. It's what this country was founded on. But yes, you're right. There are now mega corporations. There are now obscenely rich people who, if you give them more money, and once again, not to demonize success either. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's right.
But if you know, you got to do your part. And if you give them more of a break, instead of turning around and saying, you know what I'm going to do with that? I'm going to put that back into the economy and I'm going to do my part as a supposedly patriotic American. They're like, oh, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to pocket that and I'm going to send all my workers off to Mexico where it's cheap as shit.
That's exactly right. God. There's a deliberate.
I love it when you get angry. It's so sexy.
See, there's a deliberate lack of understanding, and it's only because they're trying to pitch something that is completely based on horseshit. I mean, and so therefore, any of that is irrelevant. I mean, they just don't give a shit. They don't care what it really means to have a small business. They don't care what it really means to grow the economy or what creates a recession. They just, it doesn't matter because they're existing in a non-reality based world, which they have fashioned for the sake of marketing and fun. Yeah.
Fun and games.
Yay.
Show brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. And you mentioned Michelle Bachmann earlier. Well, we have a new Bubble Genius commercial featuring Michelle Bachmann.
Introducing Michelle Bachmann with her State of the Ablution address.
I'd like to speak to you about soap. It may look innocent enough, but I have a chart here that shows Bubble Genius is completely responsible for the $30.9 trillion deficit. Normally, I'm against regulation, but this Bubble Genius company is literally run by communists, which is unconstitutional. Our founding fathers didn't tell the Germans to bomb Pearl Harbor so some vegan soap company could make a soap that looks like me. And they make their soap from razor blades and dryer lint. They say they're vegan, but you'll see my chart shows that they have meat orgies at least twice a week.
I want one of those.
Bubble Genius also practices the anti-Christian, anti-American act of voodoo on a doll that looks like me. Imagine! That's why I propose a law that says Bubble Genius must sign a loyalty oath to protect our liberty and our Constitution.
And now for the Bubble Genius rebuttal.
Dude, she's crazy. Come to our website, see what we're about. www.bubblegenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Yep. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Do it! Put in your promo code AWESOME, AWESOME, for 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. It's the best goddamn soap in the world. Now,
I have like the nice little Bose headphones that are like earbuds that I wear for my iPod while listening to this show.
Yeah.
And that Michelle Bachmann voice, like that clear in my ear, that actually really turned me on. And that scares the crap out of me. Like, that was, first of all, there was an incredible impression of her. It was very, very good.
It was good.
And all of a sudden, I'm just like, wow, it would be really cool to hear Michelle Bachmann, like, just talk really, really, really dirty to me.
Just right
That would
near
be
you.
Great. When she lets loose, you know it's got to be an amazing thing to behold.
Yeah.
You just know it.
Wasted, entirely wasted on her husband.
Exactly. Since he's probably gay. At least I think so.
You think?
Anybody who's that hung up about it. Oh, I can change them. Well, thank God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's too bad, because you know, with that accent, I can only imagine it sounds like cock. It must be fun.
Right. I was just expecting in that video for him to whip out a giant bucket full of confetti. Just to completely do...
Rip Taylor. Is everybody having fun?
Yeah! Hello! He's totally. I want to see if Marcus Bachmann and Rip Taylor are ever in the same room at the same time.
Marcus Bachmann is probably a flaming queen.
So, speaking of Michelle Bachmann, we were talking about the crazy caucus earlier. Paul Brown is definitely Congressman Paul Brown. He is absolutely in the crazy caucus. Now, we've got Alan West, mandatory for the crazy caucus. We've got. Yeah. Michelle Bachmann, she's in charge of the crazy caucus. Steve King, he's definitely in there. Louie Gohmert, absolutely. And now Paul Brown, who introduced a bill this week in which he doesn't want to raise the debt ceiling. Of course, he doesn't want to raise the debt ceiling. This bill is actually discussing, it actually mandates that we lower the debt ceiling.
Why not? Sure.
I cannot describe to you how twisty and weird that is. Yeah, there's one way to describe it. Here's a good way to describe it. You know, I once did some graphic design for the rock group Yes, the progressive sort of dinosaurs that group Yes. And
I saw them on the 90125 tour. Good tour.
Yeah. Well, they once hired me to do some stuff for them, and I did an album cover for them, and I was creating the logo for that cover. And the logo was, you know, it was kind of wide across the middle. It was a very horizontal logo. And so John Anderson calls me and says, you know, here's what he wants to do. John Anderson says, I want you to enlarge that logo so it stretches.
No, he says, I want you to enlarge that logo.
Yeah, that's right. No, he doesn't talk like that in real life. He's like, all right, listen here. This is what we're going to do.
He pitches up for that, yeah.
I want you to take that logo, stretch it out.
Oh, you're talking country singer John Anderson.
No, politician John Anderson. Okay. Ran for president in 1980. No, the John Anderson, though. They talk about a hobbit. That guy is John Anderson's a total hobbit. And he does, in real life, he does speak like that. In fact, he would call me at 2 o'clock in the morning and go, Bob, I've got to tell you. I saw the Fairy Kingdom. That's real. I've seen it. I said, what? Hello? Who is this? It's Bob. It's John. I'm going to tell you, I saw the fairies tonight. I said, what? Okay, John. Thank you.
I have no trouble at all believing every single word of that. I absolutely believe that. His lyrics are like insane.
Yeah.
It's like British bands between either singing about that kind of crap, like Middle Earth fairies and shit like that, like Tolkien stuff, or, you know, Iron Maiden singing about all their favorite World War II battles. World War II obviously left a really serious scar on England because the metal bands kept doing it for years.
I love it.
Yeah, it was like God during the Renaissance. If it weren't for World War II, there would be no 80s British metal.
So what he does, he says he wants to have this logo enlarged across the middle to the width of the cover. Okay, that makes sense. He wants it just a little bit wider. Okay. And then he says, and then once you've done that, enlarge it 3/4 more. So he wanted me to actually make the logo stretch beyond the bounds of physical space. Okay. So it was now, the logo would now be much larger than the actual page itself. So it would actually have to inject itself into some other dimension where it could continue to exist outside of that page. And that's what Paul Brown wants to do with the debt ceiling. Somehow wants to lower it, even though it's debt that we have already incurred. I mean, it's just, you can't roll that back. It's like getting your credit card statement and saying, you know what, this balance here, I just want to reduce that. Let's reduce the balance by $500 lower. Right. Yeah, just do that for me, please. Of course it doesn't work. It's completely inexplicable. There's no way it can actually happen. The only way it can actually happen is if Paul Brown gets into a time-traveling DeLorean and goes back to that time and somehow stops spending at that point. Then comes
and even then, he will be more crazy than Doc Brown.
That's right. Hopefully not run into a Paul Brown of that era, or else it would could create a paradox and implode the time-space continuum.
These people are nuts. I mean, you know, like the behavior, the adolescent behavior is just, I mean, the things that have happened, the truly circus-like, you know, we use that term a lot, that it's a circus, yeah, but the circus carnival-like atmosphere that's gone on over the past couple of weeks is the kind of thing you could not make up. I mean, Kevin McCarthy of the House, who actually looks like the old actor Kevin McCarthy, showing the clip from The Town.
Oh, yes.
To get the Republicans pumped. That was probably my favorite story of the week, you know, my favorite little mini story to come out of this larger one. Just the entire idea that, I mean, Republicans are always so, I mean, honestly, politicians in general, but Republicans especially are always so filled with this, it's this testosterone badassedness.
Yeah.
You know, they watch a clip from a movie, a Ben Affleck movie, about, you know, bank robbers who beat the crap out of people. And Alan West, of course, immediately stands up and takes the role of the Jeremy Renner character, says, you know, hey, I'm down for that. And Jeremy Renner's the guy who dies in a hail of police gunfire. Mm-hmm. Not the, you know, spoiler alert, I shouldn't have given that away. but it's just, I mean, it's completely crazy because I can actually, when I heard about that, I'm like, I can see Kevin McCarthy going home that night and like fucking his wife and just being like, you can call me Ben. Yeah. He's like, do you know what your husband did today, baby?
Right.
And you know he fucked his wife because, like Bill Maher says, Republicans always fuck their wives.
Here's the actual clip from The Town. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, here's the clip that Eric Cantor played for the Republican caucus.
I need your help. I can't tell you what it is. You can never ask me about it later, and we're going to hurt some people.
Whose car are we going to take?
Right. So they did that as a show of sort of, you know, this is the kind of solidarity we need.
Yeah.
You know, I ask, you say, you know, I say jump, you say how high. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, except for it's what a really bad movie to choose from. And not that it's a bad movie. It's actually a really good movie. But just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that you couldn't in a million years write.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it didn't take too long for the Republicans to start back with the, you know, the shooting metaphors after Gabrielle Giffords and, you know, right on the heels of this incident in Norway, too, which I want to get to as well. But, I mean, so Ben Affleck says, let's go hurt some people. The other guy says, you know, let's go get the car. And then Alan West remarks during this caucus meeting, I want to drive the car.
I'll drive the car.
I'll drive the car.
And if ever there was a better metaphor, give me the keys. I will drive the clown car right off the cliff with everyone in America in it.
It's unbelievable. Lawrence O'Donnell evidently had a little bit of fun with that whole thing last night. Said, and in fact, I think Lawrence O'Donnell actually said the word shit on the air.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Because they go and they, you know, they go beat the shit out of a guy.
Yeah.
And that's what Lawrence O'Donnell said. Oh, I think he got, you know what? I think he got bleeped. He got bleeped. But I mean, it's just, again, you know, we've got several things going on simultaneously, and leave it to the Republicans to just knee jerk into this kind of violent. The word, I guess, most recently coined about this is eliminationism.
Eliminationism, yeah.
Dave Nywert from Crooks and Liars came up with an elimination. Wrote a book called The Eliminationists, right. And
I
so
I was wondering. I had heard, you know, I had seen the book. I was wondering whether he sort of invented that word.
Yeah, I think it is his word because every time I type it, it still comes up as being misspelled. So I think it is.
Right, exactly. I was going to say I get that too.
But so I mean, then there's that. Plus, you know, right in the same week, we've got Norway. We've got this ridiculousness being played. Alan West wants to go hurt some people, literally hurt. I want to drive the car. And then the Planned Parenthood facility was someone chucked a Molotov cocktail, a Planned Parenthood facility.
Right. I mean, but that's all right because those people aren't brown. So that's not part of a larger problem. It's one or two lone nuts.
So let's, I guess we can talk about Norway a little bit because Fox News and then the Republicans having a hard time with the idea that this guy was an uber Christian who wanted to, you know, engage in another crusade against Muslims.
Yeah. That's once again, that's another one of those things this past week where I think Stewart did something on it last night.
Yeah.
Where he played, you know, he played all of the responses and obviously, you know, when his research team went back and had no trouble at all finding completely hypocritical statements about Muslims, you know. That is so utterly fucked up that I can't even get my head around that. I can't imagine, like, you know, that's so crazy making that claim that, well, he's obviously not a Christian. When he says, I'm a Christian, he wrote like a 2,000 page manifesto all about being a crazy, you know, extremist Christian. It almost makes me sad. It makes me want to go to Bill O'Reilly and say, look, you know, I get it. It's shtick, but there has to be some part of you because O'Reilly is one of the main people who's been making that claim that there's no way this guy's a Christian. He's not a Christian. And I just want to go to him and I want to say, look, I know, you know, we're on opposite sides of the fence, but you've got to be a somewhat sane human being whose brain works once in a while. I don't know how you can say that and keep a straight face. And for God's sake, seriously, tell me, because if I ever start a career in comedy or anything like that, I want to be able to deliver jokes that fucking deadpan.
Right.
It's like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, somewhere inside of him, Nomad's brain has got to be saying must sterilize. And it just it has to. There's no way you make that claim after saying that every single, you know, that Muslims are this constant threat, and anytime somebody who is Muslim, even when, kind of like Fox is doing right now, even when Muslims who consider themselves to be true Muslims come out and say he's not a Muslim because he has defiled the religion. He is not following the tenets of Islam, the same way that that's the exact same argument that these people are making about Breivik.
Yeah.
And yet they can't. Either they can't see it, they're so blinded to the hypocrisy, or they really just don't give a shit. And once again, it's – to use the word again, it's complete shamelessness.
Yeah.
And it's just – it's staggering. It really – it absolutely boggles the mind.
Yeah, it does. And I think even in the conversation – I think Stewart played the clip last night. Bill O'Reilly even brought up Hassan, the Fort Hood shooter.
Because he had a business card.
Because he had a business card. But Fox News was all over that guy for being a Muslim, and that shooting being an Islamic terrorist attack against the United States, and the similarity between Hassan as a Muslim and Breivik as a Christian is exactly the same. In fact, if you put their paperwork together. Breivik is more of a Christian than Hassan is a Muslim because Hassan had a business card declaring himself as a Muslim, and Breivik had like an entire manifesto, like a printed manifesto with illustrations. So they can't possibly say with a straight face that Hassan is a Muslim, but Breivik is not a Muslim.
Well, once again, I have to imagine that O'Reilly may be a lot of things, but I can't imagine that he is flat out stupid. I really can't.
No.
I'm giving him too much credit. I mean, I know he's a bloviating jackass, but you know, you just look at him and you want to say, have you ever heard of the no true Scotsman argument? It's an argumentative fallacy. It's fucking legendary. Look it up.
Yeah.
You know, and you are doing it to the T.
Yeah. Well, you can really get a sense of Bill O'Reilly's horseshit when Jon Stewart actually goes on the show. You can almost see Bill O'Reilly giving Stewart a wink. Like,
right.
You know
that is,
what?
That is true.
I'm full of shit. You got really seriously, Jon, you got me on this. Or he doesn't call him Jon, he calls him Stewart. You know, Stewart, you got me on this. But he's not. He's just. You can see there's a glint in his eye, and I'm not looking that closely at Bill O'Reilly's eyes. So shut up. But
they're
you can,
very pretty,
and you just get the sense that Bill O'Reilly's just not taking himself seriously anymore. He's just throwing everything out there. He's just throwing out, just contradicting himself in the same sentence, and you know, just the bullshit is showing. And it's Bill Glenn Beck hasn't reached that point yet, but he will.
Yeah, no, Beck is Andy Kaufman. Beck is maintaining the illusion flawlessly. Mm-hmm. He is not, you know, there isn't the slightest hint of irony to him. He is absolutely maintaining the illusion.
Right. He's
yeah,
good.
I mean, you know, the interesting thing for me, the other interesting thing about Breivik is it goes, what Breivik did goes back to, and what Hassan did, and basically anybody who's hyper-religious, goes back to an argument that I've made a million and one times because I am vehemently anti-religion, anti-faith-based religion, as if there's really any other kind anymore. Mm. But it's the entire idea that, of people saying, oh, well, you know what, I believe in God, but it just gets me through my day, and, you know, what's wrong with what I believe? Well, the problem is nobody believes things in a vacuum. Belief informs your actions. The only reason you walk out the door every morning is because you believe that you're not going to be run over by a bus after you take two steps outside of your front door.
Yeah.
And if you have a strong faith, even if it's a completely fucked up faith, and the problem with faith is that it is inherently unprovable. That's why they call it faith. If you have, be it a twisted faith, but if you have a very strong faith, it means that you act on it. You do things, you know, if you're just an average Christian, average Muslim, average, you know, peace-loving member of a religion, then it may not manifest itself in any completely batshit way. But if you're somebody who believes really hardcore in something, it's going to inform your actions, and you're going to go do something about it. And you're going to, you know, scream Allahu Akbar and try and bring down a plane, or you're going to go shoot up a fucking youth camp because you know, God told you to and you don't like Muslims or whatever.
I mean, I think in large part it has to do with, most of the violence that you see is a bastardization of some of these things. Because, I mean, let's face it. If you were to base your entire religion around the New Testament, which Christianity claims to do, then it would be all about everything you do would inform some degree of peace. You would be seeking peace every step of the way. You would be seeking basically everything that liberals want. You would be seeking love, peace, understanding, forgiveness,
caring for your fellow man, especially if that fellow man happens to be somebody who's destitute, you know, less well off than you, hurt, that sort of thing.
That's right. That's right. But when, you know, people tend to exploit faith and use it for, you know, political purposes to suit some kind of agenda, and a lot of times what we've witnessed recently, be it George Tiller or what, you know, what's going on at what happened at that Planned Parenthood facility, what happened in Norway or Fort Hood, and there's evidently another guy who was plotting to bomb Fort Hood or to shoot up Fort Hood.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is all a bastardization of it. This is all, you know, there's something really awful going on, and people going way, way beyond the bounds of anything that was actually intended. And there's a lot of awful things in the Bible. But, you know, if you look at the New Testament alone, and, you know, I'm not sitting here as someone, my faith was completely torn apart. You know, I felt rejected by the Catholic Church. And so I no longer practiced
any
sort of religion.
Didn't put out at a young age?
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, it was funny. You know, you get to be around a teenager, and I went to Catholic school, and, you know, I was an altar boy and all that. I can gladly say that I was never molested. But, you know, I got to the point where I was going, wait a second here. If I have all of these impulses, and if I use a condom while behaving in to these impulses, or if I even do anything with regards to those impulses, be it masturbation or what have you, then I'm committing some sort of either venial or mortal sin. And this is, I don't understand that. Can you please explain to me how that works? I'm asking, you know, pastor, other priests. Well, there was no explanation for it. And
of course not. And there is none, because it's, you know, it's you can either base your life on the abundance of knowledge that we have learned over, you know, the course of our entire history, and what you can see, what's provable fact, or, you know, you can base it on 2,000-year-old superstition, self-reinforcing superstition.
Yeah. So – right. It's then on top of that, it was, as I became more liberal, because I was very conservative up until I was around 18 or 19 years old. I was a Republican.
I actually was a little bit, too. I mean, I just followed after my dad.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. I mean, you don't really know at that point, because you haven't experienced the world as much.
But I changed when I became a punk.
That's right. You have to.
And I became a skate punk.
So, I mean, right. And so, you know, when I discovered that, oh, yes, well, women should have a right to choose what they do with their body. Well, that was really it. I mean, that was when I discovered that, you know what, the pro-life position is untenable and awful and misogynistic. That was kind of the clincher for me. I mean, I don't feel welcome in this community anymore. And so it just kind of expanded from there. And so, but regardless, just going back to my original point, was when I was, a practicing Catholic, I was always taught that it was all about peace and love, that everything that you do as a member of the church, everything that you do as a product of your faith led to peace and love. And that was the focus. But it doesn't seem that way. What it seems like now with certain factions of evangelicalism, radical Islam, radical Christianity, which we're seeing a lot of in the last 10 years to 15 years, it's really, really destructive. And so there's no other way to really slice it. When someone shoots up and kills a bunch of people in Norway or at Fort Hood, for that matter, and they're claiming to do it due to religion, you know, you really got to peg, you know, blame partly on religion and partly on the bastardization of the religion.
Right.
So I'm sort of looking at it from multi-causal way, if that makes any sense.
If you're, you know, if there's anything that you're going to be so angry about that you're willing to kill for, you have to imagine. I mean, Patton Oswalt makes the great joke about Sky Cake, how it's all basically the same, and everyone should accept it that way. But, you know, certainly, whether or not, you know, which god you worship is, if ever there was anything worth fighting over, I guess, you know, who the supreme being of the universe is you know, is as good a thing as any. But yeah, I mean, you know, political correctness kind of says that that it's very hard to talk about this sort of thing. Religion makes you good and it's off limits. And you can't say that the Quran is an incredibly violent book, which it is.
Yeah.
You know, there's no denying it. And the Bible in many, many, many places is a very violent book, you know, and both give, you know, both allow you to give permission to you to do all kinds of really horrible, horrible things.
Yeah.
And to do them in the name of God, in the name of pleasing, who is essentially a very angry, vengeful, and from what I've seen, petty God, if you believe the Bible or the Quran.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I mean, this has to be crap that at some point, you know, I'm not saying that the screaming atheist, like, you know, beat it down your throat way is always the way to go. I'm turning into that because I feel like I have to kind of fight back a little bit against what's coming at me from the other side. I'm taking the Fox News attitude about it. I'm not really fair and balanced, but I balance out somebody. Mm-hmm. So.
I, this is something I talk about for hours now.
This is going to be the Michelle Bachman thing again, right?
Yes, it is.
Hold on. So, give me a second to get my pants around my knees.
And Bubble Genius is the exclusive sponsor of the Bob and Chez Show. And you can find them at www.bubblegenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. And here's Michelle Bachman.
Introducing Michelle Bachman with her State of the Ablution address.
I'd like to speak to you about soap. It may look innocent enough, but I have a chart here that shows Bubble Genius is completely responsible for the $30.9 trillion deficit. Normally, I'm against regulation, but this Bubble Genius company is literally run by communists, which is unconstitutional. Our founding fathers didn't tell the Germans to bomb Pearl Harbor so some vegan soap company could make a soap that looks like me. And they make their soap from razor blades and dryer lint. They say they're vegan, but you'll see my chart shows that they have meat orgies at least twice a week.
Almost there.
Bubble Genius also practices the anti-Christian, anti-American act of voodoo on a doll that looks like me. Imagine! That's why I propose a law that says Bubble Genius must sign a loyalty oath to protect our liberty and our Constitution.
And now for the Bubble Genius rebuttal.
Dude, she's crazy. Come to our website, see what we're about. www.bubblegenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Exactly. I'm starting to get a little disgusted. I'm starting to feel a little barfy from the whole idea of whacking it to the Bubble Genius.
Trust me, I've masturbated to worse.
It's a funny bit. And now, oh wait, oh now I'm having bit regret. Oh God. Anyway, so type in your promo code awesome AWESOME and get 15% off your entire order at bubblegenius.com. Yeah, I'm looking at this, Chez. Melissa Harris Perry is filling in for Rachel this week on MSNBC.
Oh, she looks. You know who Melissa Harris Perry looks like? She's very attractive. She looks like one of the Tanktonese women from the old Alien Nation show.
That's right. She does.
Nothing awful. Just she looks Tanktonese.
See, the hair looks like those whatever they had, like the sort of the skull tattooing or something.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
But she's great, though. I mean, I think she's just a natural host.
I do like her.
We were pretty harsh on Reverend Al and got called on the carpet a little bit about it last week. And as far
care.
As
I don't care one bit. I still think he's terrible.
He is terrible. He's a terrible, terrible host. I mean, say what you will about his politics and
that's a fine point. Take that take that totally off the table if you want. I won't because I don't like him as a person. I mean, I think he's done good things. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not going to go down that road again. Yeah. But yeah, just as a broadcaster, awful, awful, inexcusably awful.
And here's the dichotomy. I mean, here you can have fill-in hosts who are actually good at talking.
Absolutely.
Who actually have a presence on television and who are actually smart and can speak extemporaneously on a variety of topics. Melissa Harris-Perry, good substitute. Thomas Roberts, good substitute. You got...
Thomas Roberts. I want to be that guy's twink. I love him.
And then
holy
you want to...
When he hammered that, who the hell did he beat the crap out of when he said that Michelle Bachmann wants to extinguish gay people? I love that. I'm like, That is one hardcore motherfucking gay man. I love him.
It was that really kind of haggard-looking DJ from Las Vegas, that woman DJ, that talk show host from Las Vegas. She's on, like, with Ed all the time. She looks really, like very, very, like, sun-dried. She looks like a sun-dried, like, banana or something.
Wonder what you were saying, though. I think you're absolutely right. I actually think that Melissa Harris-Perry writes for The Nation, doesn't she? I've come to believe that they can get all of their people from The Nation now. They should bring Ari Melber on too and let him fill in because he's great whenever he's a guest. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's good. Katrina Vandenhoevel, who's the editor of The Nation, she's good as a guest. I don't know how good she would be as a host. But what's his name? Chris Hayes is from The Nation.
Exactly. Yeah. Chris Hayes I'd get in so much trouble for saying he looks like the female Rachel Maddow.
Jesus. I was thinking he looked like Keith Olbermann's mini-me.
He actually does. This is no like lesbian thing against. Matter at all. I'm actually just saying that he actually looks. He looks so completely like he's such a little dweeb. I love how I dig myself out of that hole before.
That's right. You've retreated to the dweeb position. I was thinking that he looks. I thought for a while that Keith Olbermann was bringing in, and this is when Olbermann obviously was at MSNBC. I thought Olbermann was bringing in only people who looked like him, like Richard Wolff, Chris Hayes. They all look like if you line up Olbermann, Richard Wolff, and Chris Hayes, it would be like like Olbermann through time. It'd be like Olbermann at age 20, Olbermann at age 40. And then you have actual Olbermann at age 50 something, whatever he is.
They all own stock in Oliver People's Eyewear.
It's like a time lapse photo of Keith Olbermann. If you were to line
it's one of those evolutionary charts,
right? Chris Hayes, Richard Wolff, and Keith Olbermann—they're like the same guy, just time traveling Olbermann. Like Olbermann is interviewing himself, and he just throws in the British accent for Richard Wolff to break it up. Just to throw us off our trail. We'll never assume that it's automatically time traveling.
I could see that. I could. Keith's ego is big enough to where I could see him doing an entire show where he does nothing but interview himself.
Exactly.
I love Olbermann. He's a brilliant broadcaster, but it's a well known fact that he is massively huge egomaniac.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where it's almost impossible to work with them. And yeah, that I could see that. I could see an entire show where I couldn't find any intelligent guests. So here is me.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Here's my theory with Olbermann on Current. I don't know if you've seen him on Current yet.
A couple times, and I was actually a little disappointed because I thought the show looked a little too much like the MSNBC show, and I wanted something different.
Yeah.
But that's...
Well, that might just be his comfy shoe. I'm sure he's going to expand and do some different things as he grows more and more comfortable being at a different network. But the problem is, I think it's a similar dynamic to Stern going to Sirius Satellite Radio, which is as soon as you get to the point where you have unlimited latitude, it softens the show. I thought Stern was much more entertaining on FM radio because he had to think on his feet. He had to be creative with how he got away with what he got away with. And I think likewise, Olbermann in a position where he gets to essentially call his own shots, it's become much more of, and it sort of was when he was on MSNBC, but not so much because it was tempered by management, but it's almost like it's really, really now an echo chamber.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for all the bitching that people do about management, and God knows I've done it a lot,
yeah.
There is something to be said for people who are there are only so many Louis C.K.'s in the world, mm-hmm. who, you know, who do their entire show with complete creative control and turn in brilliance.
Yeah.
For the most part, a lot of people who are creative and have very large – I think it might be – maybe it's creative and no ego makes you be good at what you do. But creative and big ego, sometimes obviously that's kind of a bad combination, because you tend to think that everything you do is just brilliant. And sometimes it's good to be reined in. It's good to have somebody who says, you know, whether it's someone – you know, someone that you trust, or somebody who is, you know, antagonizes you, but yeah, somebody who basically says, look, no, this doesn't work. You need to pull that back a little bit, or you need to, you know, somebody to kind of slalom between.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in fact, I was talking about this with Shannon Moore before you joined the show. Mm-hmm. She was on sort of as the final substitute host before you came on. And we were talking about Sarah Palin. We were talking about how Sarah Palin, when she was a lower level politician, was a little more humble and actually took the advice and the tutelage of her advisors and was therefore a better, or at least somewhat more articulate politician. I mean, she still said awful things, but the way she said them was with a little more, you know, articulation. And what she said made sort of sense, at least in the fact that they were actual sentences. And if you look at debates from, you know, her gubernatorial debates, they were actual. I mean, this is like night and day. There's a different Sarah Palin. And once she got all of this notoriety and the ability to kind of, you know, basically the fuck you money. Once Sarah Palin got the fuck you money, she became this inarticulate doofus and, you know, started to believe her press and started to believe what conservatives were saying about her, and therefore became this blethering idiot. Now, that's leading into what is this week's stupid Palin thing of the day.
Mm.
And she was talking about, you know, she sort of was leaning, but she was on Fox Business Channel, somehow got relegated to Fox Business Channel, and was talking about, once again, familiar territory. We were speaking earlier about those Palin rallies that kind of gave birth to the Tea Party, where there was a lot of race baiting going on. Outright racism. Let's call a spade a spade. It's outright racism. You know, guys,
no pun intended.
Right. Guys.
Terrible terminology.
You know what? I'm going to regret that later. but, you know, guys holding up Curious George dolls saying, oh, this is little Hussein, you know, and things like that.
That was despicable.
Yeah. But here's Sarah Palin. This is yesterday, okay, on Fox Business Channel, playing the race card with regards to the presence. Unbelievable. It's absolutely shameless. Listen to this.
Again, Governor, it's so interesting that Americans are reining in their spending and paying down their debt. Americans are delevering, yet Washington is not. I mean, do you think the president... Seems to me that you don't think the president gets it, that Washington needs to stop spending. Why is there this disconnect?
No, he does not get it, that Washington needs to live within our means. And that does not mean increasing debt and raising a debt ceiling in order to have an even bigger check, a blank check at this point, for Congress to continue spending way beyond our means. He doesn't seem to understand that. But I think a lot of that, Lori, has to do with his background. Having not been a part of the private sector, a part of running a business or having to rely on making profit and investing according to a free market entrepreneur's priorities in order to grow a business and hire more people. That seems to be foreign to our president.
Foreign.
And that's quite unfortunate because his background and those whom he seems to be appointing just don't understand what America was built upon, what our economy was built upon, and why we grew into the most prosperous and freest nation in the world. Now, his ideas are really the antithesis of those things that created the prosperity in America. Again, quite unfortunate.
Yeah. You know, our economy was built upon our ability to borrow money. We borrowed money from day one.
And you know what our economy was built upon? People like Barack Obama, who were slaves, who built the fucking country.
There you go. Exactly right. Exactly right.
You know what he does? You know what he does? When he gets paid, he goes and spends the money on grape juice and Boost mobile phones. And sometimes he goes down to the mall where the white people used to go to, but they don't go there anymore.
Well, you know, the ridiculous. Other thing is the whole premise, the setup for that. I put all the race baiting aside. The premise of the question was ridiculous. People are reducing their spending, but they're also racking up more debt. I mean, what I said, I was having a conversation, strangely, though, with my dad right as the recession was beginning. I was like, you know what you ought to do? If you have some extra money, invest in Visa. Buy some Visa or MasterCard stock. Because what we're going to do is we're going to start, because gas prices are still high, cost of living still high, and, you know, we're going to end up spending on credit. And regardless of whether we're maxed out on our credit cards, we're going to get more credit cards. And we're going to keep spending because there's no other money. We're losing our jobs. Things are more expensive. How are we going to get by? How are we going to pay our mortgage? How are we going to make our car payments? How are we going to buy groceries? How are we going to buy gas? We're going to spend on credit. So we are racking up more debt. Not everyone was able to, you know, bail out and file Chapter 7 and get a bailout. You know, we just ended up spending more money, but on debt. And anyone who couldn't spend on debt, just they stopped spending and lapsed into poverty.
No, absolutely. That's what I did when I was unemployed years ago. I think I ran my credit card bill up to something. I think I'm still paying it off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so the whole idea that families are reducing their debt. Well, I mean, there may be some people who are doing it. I mean, I think you could speak anecdotally and say that's what people are doing. I think what you'll find at the end of all of this is that, you know, there's increased credit card spending. I think when the economy finally recovers, we're just going to lapse right back into where we were. I think it's going to be more difficult to get a home loan, maybe, but I think we're all going to get credit cards. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with you. Coming out of the recession, I mean, I had to shut down a business. My credit is terrible. I mean, my credit was destroyed as a result of shutting down the business. And I've got also real estate issues, which you've been following along the show. I've talked about those a little bit. And yet, you know what? I've qualified for 3 different credit cards. I mean, I'm still
it's
getting
amazing how that works.
Yeah. I mean, it is really, really remarkable. So, I mean, I'm not the only one. Trust me. So, you know. But then, you know, Sarah Palin's got to get into the idea that Barack Obama never worked for the private sector. Even though he did, he worked for a law firm. Idiot.
She's been relegated to the B stage now that you know, she's not on the main pole in the strip club anymore.
Yeah.
That's where Michelle Bachmann is.
Well, the thing is,
if she's doing Fox Biz.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and of course the point is not Sarah Palin specifically. This is the kind of nonsense that's being spread around throughout Wingnutia. You know, this is the ongoing meme about the president, that he doesn't understand that, you know, and people keep feeding it, that people need to, that the government needs to be run like it's a family sitting around the kitchen table deciding, you know, what to do about their reduced income and their increased debt, and or that the government is run like a business. I mean, it's just such nonsense. It's such a false metaphor.
Government when is, John Anderson hears this, he's going to call you and tell you that he's been to Wingnutia.
That's right.
My little callback there.
He's seen the Fairy Kingdom.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that process wasn't nearly as frustrating as watching cable news and watching this proceeding going on, because what I'm just seeing is, and having seen the shit end of the Great Recession, at the end of the day, I just don't want to do it again. I don't want to go through all of that horse shit again. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen. There's going to be some kind of fallout from all of this. Whether it's they come up with a deal, they cut spending, and that creates another recession. Or they don't come up with a deal, the debt ceiling isn't raised, we default on our debt, 40% of the government is shut down, interest rates go through the roof, the world economy collapses, dogs and cats sleeping together, mass hysteria.
Mass hysteria.
So I don't know. I don't know how all of this works out well. I do believe, contrary to a lot of fellow liberals, that I do think that the president is doing a fine job in the negotiations. All things being equal, and let's say there's a narrow chance that we all come out of this okay with the economy, that the president's going to do okay when it comes to re-election. Because
he's taking the tack that when you're in a room full of assholes, the smartest thing to do is to not be one of the assholes.
That's right. To be the adult in the room.
Right.
You know, to stick the little kids at the little kids' table, you know, to hurl, you know, to fling shit at each other, and then, you know, we're going to be the adults on the other side, having a decent conversation and getting things done. Well, thanks, Jazz.
Thank you.
We're going to do it again next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. And we'll see you next Thursday. Take care, everybody.
See ya.
Once more. Just touch me once more. Just once more, huh? Just once more. Just touch me once more.
Play the game, Hardy.